Okay. First, if it works, keep doing it. Now, I know this is a very difficult concept. And and there are humiliating stories about many people in this room about the fact that you find something that works and then you screw with it. But I assure you that that is not the smart thing to do. Okay? When you find something that works, you put this over on the other side of your brain in the pile that is working, and you kind of think of it like an oil well that goes around and pumps and goes around and pumps and goes around and pumps, and it pumps while you're asleep and it pumps while you're awake, and the effect of that is to put money in the bank, which is, of course, the object. Now, if you take this thing that works and screw with it ad nauseum, of course, it'll stop working, and you won't be able to remember because you threw out all those pages that wrote down what was that worked, whatever that was. I mean, you've revised it and rewritten it and made it better, 1,000 times better, and of course it's turned to shit right in front of your nose. Okay, the fact is, if something works, you put it in the pile that works, and you keep doing it, because that means that what you're doing that you're testing, you don't have to pay for out of your pocket anymore. Now, I'll say that again. If you continue doing things that work over here, okay, that means they make a little money. They don't have to make $1 million, just a few. That means all the stuff over here that you're trying to do and find out whether it works, all the improvements that you want to do over on this side of your head, on the right side of your life, far away from the money-making part, okay, where you have all your bright ideas, that's free. Free. Free is no money out of your pocket. Wake up, sissy. Okay? That's free. That's number one. Number two, do not fall in love with your product. Do not be seduced by your technology. And the next person who has a great idea about a product, tell them it's nice knowing you. I'll say that again. Do not fall in love with your product. Do not fall in love with technology. And the next person who tries to recruit you in their enthusiasm for their product, buy them a cup of coffee and be nice, because you know they're in for a real rough time. And maybe if you've passed this sort of retrovirus kind of mental thing that people get when they get into business and you're kind of, you know, unbent a little bit, then the fact is that you'll have real deep sympathy and empathize with this poor person, because they're going to have a real bad time. And you can tell them all about that, but you'll never dissuade them from riding that rail all the way to the brick wall at the end of it. Okay, and it's perfectly all right to do this. Can we have a mic now? Yes, ma'am.
When we want to do the test, it's the first time we're doing it, do you suggest, how long a period of time would you suggest that we run it for, and how many newspapers or magazines should we run it in?
Those are specifics, and I would say that you would want to test a sufficient amount of time in the cycle that is dictated by the audience. The audience will tell you, in other words, if the audience is in monthly magazines, then obviously, you know, you're 60 days from getting in any place. If you can get to them in a weekly periodical, then obviously you can get in faster, but you would need to test a couple or 3 weeks to test your hypotheses, because your first week in both small ads will not give you an accurate reading. You need at least 2, maybe 3.
And if we tested in a weekly, how many to start would you suggest that we put it in?
I like at least 1 million circulation, and I like that geographically distributed, if at all possible. But sometimes 300,000 will give you a real clear view.
You mean 1 million over several different newspapers?
Yeah. You just gang them up. That's a different discussion. I'll be glad to have that with you individually. It's quite specific. And that would again,
it's more related to your budget than anything else.
Well, no, it's also related to your view of the market and the product. Mm-hmm. And it is then related to your budget, because it is very possible to come up with a market and a product that you can't afford. So once you get the budget, you say, ha, 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 great, we'll put this over here. Okay.
The temptation is to be lazy, write one 20-word classified ad, take your whole budget, every penny you got, place it in that ad and say, boy, this is it. Because that's the easy way to do it.
And again, you're that guy on the other end of the coffee cup who's facing somebody who knows you're in for a real delusional, greased ride. Yes, sir.
You said never to use an 800 number in a test. You found something that is working, tested, or?
Well, I would test it, sure, as long as it would. Yeah, I'd test it, you know, but then I'd go negotiate with some 800 carrier to screw them down like we did and get down to 9 cents a minute. And then, you know, all of a sudden, 800s look real attractive, because on your ready access, you're paying 22 at the absolute low end and 32 at the high end on your switched access. But that is based on volume, that is based on demonstration, that is based on a program that is already performing to a very high profitable standard. And we ooch that in there. I mean, there was a time when we considered those things. I need to get on with my list, or else I'm never going to finish. Number three, examine, write this down. This is good. I have not said this before. Examine all evidence of success and failure. I'll say this again. Examine all evidence of success and failure. Have we run out of tape yet, Ron? Good. Examine all evidence of success and failure. The next thing is, never sell a product without a back end. We're not talking about curvaceous hips. We are talking about something that is the next product you're going to sell them. Because after you sell them the first product, then you need to bump off that thank you letter with that offer for that additional product. And all those poor suckers who didn't convert through whatever mechanism, you want to get a next letter in the mail to them to try to sell them something else, or discount the product you've got, or add a premium, or keep screwing with it until you squeeze as much money out of all those leads as you possibly can, because that's business. My favorite one is test, 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 test. I'll repeat that. Test, 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 test. The next one is fail forward. Do not fail backwards. Your ass is behind you. The future is in front of you. Move forward. It doesn't matter how many times you fall down. As long as you keep moving forward, you will get much closer to where you want to get. If you fall backwards, you are simply on your back. Okay, do I need to explain that? Are you with me so far? We've made a lot of money failing forward, Phil and I have. We have been very fortunate, but we have been very calculating and very shrewd and very serious about putting money in the bank, which is the way you get successful. We are very grateful for our success. We know that it just didn't happen to us because we were nice guys and Phil's taller than I am. It happened because we really worked at it. We paid attention to a lot of the things that people don't want to pay attention to. That does not make us less grateful. And speaking of gratitude, I want to thank Bill Myers for inviting me here and giving me all of these wonderful people to stand up and showboat to. I also specifically want to, it's difficult to do a build-up for Gary Myers, Gary Myers and Bill Halbert. It is difficult, you know, two bodies, one mind. And boy, wouldn't that be something to see. It is really difficult to give any kind of a build-up to Gary Halbert, but I will tell you that Phil started the classified business from information in Gary Halbert's newsletter that has become tremendously successful for us. We've acknowledged this many times, but it is always a wonderful opportunity to do that. The most successful company that I mentioned to you that's done nearly 2 million in 11 months came from Gary Halbert's newsletter. Most of the people in this room who I have met, I met through Gary Halbert. And other than being sort of a demented and evil genius, he is also a great guy. So I think that in the next hour, you're really in for some great stuff. Thanks.
John, would you do me a favor? Would you say that word again that you just said?
What?
It started with two.
Oh, two bodies, one mind.
No, it started with two. The second word started with M. I think it's like 2 million. Would you say that again?
2 million?
Everybody hears the word million.
Oh, you know, that's the one with all the zeros. See, after a while, you count money in commas. You know, I used to think, if you're up to two commas, that's money. One comma, well, you know, I mean, you know, you can hold your head up. I mean, you can be like David Deutsch now, an author, a published author, as opposed to a schlep. You know, but when you get up to two commas, you know, I mean, that's hot. Two commas is hot. You got any questions? It's unlisted, but for you, it's 214-443-9797. Mm-hmm. 214, for those of you who are cautious. 214-443-9797.
We're going to give everybody a list of all the phone numbers. John,
and
I want to
he'll
thank
do
you.
Mine wrong. Thanks.
The most dangerous man he knew. He didn't know. At that time, Karen worked for him. Now Karen and I are married, and I wasn't doing seminars at that time. So I guess I'm not as dangerous as I used to be. But maybe that's it. And Gary's going to speak on anything he wants. I mean, there's no way I can tell Gary what to talk. He's just going to talk about what he wants, and that's going to be the way. And Gary, you promised not to say anything about Karen, didn't you?
Right. Count on me. Thank you. Thank you. I slipped out this afternoon to go down to the bathhouse. I've never had a grown man give me a bath before. I shouldn't have told him I was from Key West, I can tell you that. Some people have asked me to talk about Karen and how we first met and the first work that she did for me, but Karen's asked me not to reveal that. I don't know why. I thought it was honorable work, so I'm going to let it go. I want to ask you, I know I have some subscribers here. I'm just wondering if I could see the hands of anybody who's read an issue of my newsletter. Oh, shit. Well, okay, I'll go on to something else then. I said I'll go on to something else then. I beg your pardon? Okay. All right, you've been getting some valuable advice here about merchant accounts and setting up a corporation and how to process your orders with Q&A, whatever that is. I've got it. I don't know what it is. And a bunch of other things. And those things are all important. In fact, in your total business success, they will account for approximately 0.1% of your success. The other 99.9% of your success will depend on your ability to get a sale. It is astonishing to me that people are in here worrying about how they're going to pay the taxes from the direct mail profits they're going to make. You let us pray to God that you have those problems. I don't want to demean the importance of the other things, because you do have to run a very tight ship. But of all the things you want to concentrate on, 99.9% of your concentration should be on how to achieve a sale. Because if you get the sale, I guarantee you, if you get enough sales, you can buy solutions to all the rest of those problems. If there's anybody in this room and I had a stack of $100 checks, you know, that totaled $500,000, and I said, you can deposit this money and you can keep it. If you can get a merchant account, if you can learn how to process your orders, if you can learn how to address your envelopes, is there anybody here that thinks that they wouldn't deposit those checks and learn how to do the rest of that? You can buy all that information. You need to concentrate on how to get the sale. And when it comes to direct mail and many other forms of marketing, there are six things that you have to decide. There are more than six, but there are six I'm going to talk about today. And you have to get the answers to these six areas correctly to give yourself a chance. And if you do, I think you're going to have well on your way to actually getting rich in direct mail. I'm going to enumerate these first, and then I'm going to elaborate on them. The first thing you've got to decide is, what product are you going to sell? The second thing is, you have to figure out what market you're going to sell that product to. Third thing you have to figure out is, what is your offer going to be? The fourth thing you have to figure out is, what selling formula are you going to use? The fifth thing you have to figure out is, what CSI are you going to feature? CSI stands for Central Selling Idea. And the sixth thing you have to figure out is, what format are you going to learn use to do this? I want to talk about product first. A lot of people try to find a clever product or a unique product or a new product or a fresh product. And that's all well and good, but a far better idea is if you go out and try and find an underexploited product. Underexploited product. The way to win the race in direct response is to find a horse that's already making it around the track, and then to get yourself an electric cattle prod and make that horse finish in the money. I'm going to tell you a story about a product. Many years ago, back in Ohio, I was visiting the newspaper, the Akron Beacon Journal, and there was a guy there that I was talking to, and he told me that they ran this little coupon that said, request for statement of earnings. And when their readers filled it out, The paper would forward it to the Social Security Administration, who would then give them a printout of how much money they had paid into Social Security. And he said, but they just about had to stop running that little coupon as a service. And I said, why is that? He said, even when we bury it on page 74, we get, and he told me the number of replies they got, and the number of responses they got was 17% of their circulation, even when this was buried. So my greed glands immediately fired up to full secretion. I hired a guy in Miami to write a book for me called How to Collect from Social Security at Any Age. That was not only the title of the book, it was a headline I used to sell it. We had a double coupon at the bottom. The pitch was you fill out both these coupons. The left one will be sent to the appropriate government office, and you'll find out exactly how much money you paid into Social Security. The right one will get you a copy of our new book, How to Collect from Social Security at Any Age. It'll tell you how to maximize the benefits of that, of what you've already paid into that. That was back in the early 1970s, and my company made a net profit of $1 million selling that one book. Currently, there is a man in Carlsbad, California, who is running ads with the clever headline, How to Collect from Social Security at Any Age. And much of his copy is identical to the copy that I used back in Ohio, which I think a person shouldn't do. I think that you should be inspired by other advertising. I don't think that you should lift it so directly. But in any case, he runs that ad as a long, narrow strip ad over and over and over and over in the National Enquirer. The reason he runs it over and over is because he makes money with it. Now, somebody is going to make $1 million from what I am about to tell you. That somebody could be sitting in this room. The guy who is running the ad in Carlsbad, California, is not exploiting that book to its fullest. All he's doing is running an ad, describing the book, and asking for payment for the book. Let me suggest to you some ways to exploit that in a much more profound way. Number one, he could be running a bigger ad. Number two, he could be running in more media, namely Parade Magazine and the other newspaper distributed magazines. Number three, he could have feature a celebrity in the headline of that ad. Can you imagine what would happen to that ad if the ad now read, Eddie Albert reveals how to collect from Social Security at any age? Another thing that could be done is there could be, we'll hold your check for 30 days. You could offer a double your money back guarantee based on performance and so forth. The thing is, if I were to choose a product to work on for one of you, and you were going to hire me and let me pick it, I would say this to you. I will not only write the ad, I would arrange to have the book written, and I'd get the celebrity, and so on and so forth. But you don't need to hire me to do it. You can do that yourself. Somebody's going to do that, and somebody is very well going to become a multimillionaire because of that. But the product already exists. You would be doing a variation, perhaps an improved version of that. The product exists. It's not unique. It's not new. It's not fresh, but it's underexploited. So don't bust your brain trying to figure out what's new and cute and unique and all that. First of all, you're going to fail 9 out of 10 times because you can't read the public's mind. Become aware of what is selling already, and then become aware of things that you can exploit. I not only published the Gary Halbert letter, I'm now coming out with a new newsletter, which is called Hot Stuff. And Hot Stuff is a monthly newsletter that comes out with 10 ideas or concepts or products that I think are especially suitable to be sold by direct marketing. And the first issue of that will come off the press in about 30 days. We just announced the newsletter and we got a tremendous response. So if any of you are interested in just having it spoon-fed to you, you can get that. But let me tell you some ways that you can get it on your own. First of all, you should start hanging out in bookstores and you should become very much aware of what nonfiction books are bestsellers. Every nonfiction book that's a bestseller, almost everyone anyway, contains the idea that you need to, that you can turn into a direct response bestseller. Another thing you should have is, you should either own or you should become very familiar with, is a two volumes or gigantic volumes called Books in Print, the subject guide to Books in Print. And what that does is you can look up any subject under the sun, from diets to mosquitoes, and it will list all the books that are in print there. I also think you should get that the video cassette that Bill Myers talked about with all the special interest videos. And above all, you should become aware, student of advertising. You should get Cosmopolitan every month. You should get the Reader's Digest. You should get the National Enquirer. And you should look for those ads that repeat over and over. And what you're looking for is, hey, this guy keeps running this ad over and over. What could I do to make this horse run faster? And there's a lot of things you can do that other people won't do because it just takes them out of their comfort zone. One of the main things that takes people out of their comfort zone is they can't even imagine they could get a celebrity to star in their ads. That's nonsense. You can get celebrities for $3,500 on up. And that's chump change compared to what they can do. Now, let me tell you something about getting celebrities as a magnifier for your ad. You do not, a celebrity will not make someone buy that product. Michael Jackson, for example, was hired an enormous amount of money to promote a line of footwear. Didn't work. But what a celebrity will do is, if you've got a horse that's running, you know, like a fifth all the time, that celebrity can ride that horse into the money. And the reason is, what that celebrity does is credentials your promotion. It's not that they buy it because the celebrity said they should. They believe it because he said it. It's the difference between me talking to you about AIDS and Magic Johnson talking to you about AIDS. So always think about how you can enhance it. Look for products that are already selling and keep your thinking cap on. Is this an underexploited product? You know, and most often they are. Okay, let's go to the next thing. What market should you offer this to? You already know, you've already been introduced a little bit to the world of mailing list. And what I'm going to tell you about now is not by any means the only way to find the right market for your list, but it is one of the very good ways. One of the very good ways is to create your own mailing list by running lead generating ads in media that will be read by your prospects. One of the things that you should become aware of is how much money a customer is worth to you. Now, in some promotions, a customer is really not worth all that much money, because, like in the heraldic promotion we did, the coat of arms, mostly once you've sold a person two or three heraldic coats of arms, they're out of the market for coats of arms. On the other hand, there are some sales that lead to gigantic back in sales. And I recently did put on my thinking cap, and I was trying to, you know, I want to tell you something. I don't have any money. I never have any money. I make more money than anybody I've ever met who doesn't have any money. My money is like a weigh station. You know, I'm a weigh station for money. It goes and just screams off my chest and bounces off. That's why I have to keep sharp all the time. But anyway, I got to thinking, where have I made most of my money? And most of the money I've made has been from clients. I've been very reluctant to take clients. I've had quite a number of very splashy successes, but most of my creative work's been done for me. And finally, I have gotten to the point in my life where I don't like hassling with merchant accounts. I don't like hassling with the bureaucrats and all the rest of it. So now I've decided I only want to write my newsletter and work for clients. Working for clients can be truly lucrative. One man paid me $1,200,000 for 3 days' work, and he had all the grief, and I like that. So anyway, now that I've decided to go after clients, I'm going to illustrate to you how I'm doing that. If I resonate with anything the other speakers have said here, and I resonate with a lot of it, There's one thing that Bill keeps saying over and over, I think he's absolutely right on. It's one of the few things I think he's right on. But on this particular thing, he's right, and so are all the rest of them. In today's market, you want to sell to what I call PWMs, players with money. You want to sell to people with money. Forget selling to the general public if you have a choice. Forget selling the Kmart people. Forget the little people. You want the people with money. Now, let's talk about making your own mailing list. This is a lead generating ad that will soon be running. It's going to debut in Denver, Colorado very soon, and then I intend to run it in all the places that Ted Nicholas is going to tell me where to run it, which is places that business owners read. And I'm going to read this ad to you because it'll give you the idea of what a lead generating ad is about. The lead-in headline says, "Is the economy hurting your business? Marketing Genius now offering free trips to Key West, Florida for Denver business owners who want to make truly huge profits," by Blade Thomas, Consumer TV. Have you heard about that marketing wizard who has settled in Key West, Florida and refuses to budge? He used to have offices at 595 Madison Avenue in New York and 9000 Sunset Boulevard in Los Angeles, but now he says, quote, "I don't even want to visit those cities," unquote. His name is Gary Halbert. Insiders call him the Prince of Print, and he has probably helped more people make more money than any other marketing man in history. He's also very modest. One of his idiosyncrasies is he refuses to do business with anyone unless he has met them face to face. Therefore, if you want this guy to help you virtually explode the profitability of your business, you're going to have to go to Key West to meet him. That's the bad news. The good news is he will pay all your expenses, including round-trip airfare, your hotel bill, and even all your costs for food and beverages. And guess what? Even though he is willing to do all this, there is absolutely no risk or obligation on your part. His only requirement is there must be a fairly serious chance you and he can work together. What that means, according to Halbert, is you've got to be real. In other words, he refuses to waste time with dreamers or wannabes. If you want to work with him, you've either got to own an existing business that's up and going, or you must have an ethical first-class product or service to sell and enough capital to roll out any killer profit-generating campaign he is able to create for you. Halbert's methods are unusual to say the least. However, they are all ethical, and in most cases, they work like crazy. Also, he's an absolute dictator about his work, and here's what he says to all new clients. Quote, "Don't expect me to slow down to a crawl just to make you comfortable. When it comes to money, I go right for the jugular. If this takes you out of your comfort zone, look in the yellow pages under advertising agencies and go ahead and waste your time. Brilliant PhDs will be happy to create a much more conventional and totally unprofitable campaign for you," unquote. Does he sound conceited? He is. But he's got lots of reasons to brag. He's helped all kinds of clients from an Academy Award-winning movie star, famous sports figures, giant multi-million dollar corporations, and so on and so forth. Then it says if you're interested, then it gives them the phone, fax, and so forth. That's a lead-generating ad. I intend to have a family of those ads, smaller ones, intermediate-sized ones. And I'm going to give you a formula that I didn't invent, but I learned from a guy who talked at one of my seminars named Rick Nieswander. The formula is you run small, little small display ads in space, like in Entrepreneur magazine, if that happens to be where your prospects lie. And then you follow that up with a hard-hitting multi-page direct mail letter, and you offer those people, as in Nieswander's case, a $10,000 product. The woman who was Rick Nieswander's partner is now planning to come to Key West to become a client of mine. She sells a $9,900 package using that formula, and they commonly sell 25 to 30 of those a month. Now, when you sell a $10,000 product, or in my case, a $15,000 service, you really put the odds on your side, because we're not talking about, you know, 1.7% or 4% or 10% or 9%. We're talking about anybody that goes for it. Your advertising costs are recouped and you make a profit. And in my case, the $15,000 is only the beginning, because the back-end profits sometimes virtually amount to hundreds of thousands or even millions of dollars. So I'm going to say to you, and I want to emphasize that over and over, if at all possible, construct your life so that you can sell a high-end, a high-ticket product. Your life will be easier. And not only that, you know what? It's easier to sell a $10,000 or a $15,000 product than it is or a $10 or $15 product. I know you don't believe that, but let me tell you why it's true. Because a guy to pay $10 or $15,000, he has to be a Ted Nicholas or a Bill Myers or somebody of that ilk. And he has to be a businessman, he has to have money, and those people are used to making decisions. They don't have to go home and ask their mommy if they can write this check. But the lower down the food chain the guy is, when you get down to the bottom feeders and you're trying to suck $10 out of the guy, he's got to talk it over with his wife and his aunt and his uncle and everybody, and it's a real drag anyway. So sell a high-end product, if you possibly can. Okay. Now, after the third thing we have here is what offer are you going to make? There is, once you have a promotion that's showing life, there is nothing that will multiply the profits of that promotion, I'll probably kill myself here, as much as changing the offer. You know, the copy's not the supreme thing. A lot of people, hell, John Carlton can write copy. You know, but the offer can make a monstrous 300, 400, 500% difference. Since I've decided to go after clients, I thought a lot about that. And my offer is now, if there's a real chance of me doing business with you, if you're for real, and you don't have to give me a guarantee, but if it's real, I'll pay your round-trip airfare, your hotel bills, all your food and beverage expenses, fly you to Key West just so we can talk about it. You know, it's a funny thing. I made that offer recently, and I've had over 100 people want to take me up on it. One of them, I'm reading the 20 questions my staff fills out, and I thought somebody was kidding me. You know, because we have a question, how many employees do you have? This guy's answer is 18,000. He says, how many stores or offices do you have? 600. Do you know who it is? It's Nations Bank, the one that merged with these two big banks, and they're one of the biggest banks in the country. And the guy doesn't want to wait. He wants to fly down right away. But you know, it's a funny thing. When I worked for Entrepreneur Magazine as an outside consultant, and Loretta Duffy can verify this, you would be surprised how many people with money were thrilled to death if me or Loretta would get them a free How to Make Money in Balloon Vending report. And here's this guy from Nations Bank and a lot of other people getting real excited because I'm going to spend $600 to fly him into Key West. Think about your offer. The weakest offer you can make is, here's the product, here's what it'll do for you, it costs X amount of dollars, you give me the money, I give you the product, you go on your way, that's it. That's the one extreme. The other extreme is, look, I don't know if this is right for you or not, but I'm going to give it to you. You take it, use it for a week. If you like it, bring it back. We'll make a deal. If you don't like it, you know, we'll part friends. Usually, the money is somewhere in the middle of that. Usually, a very good offer, like for my newsletter, for example, is I will give you, say, a dozen valuable free premiums with a trial subscription to my newsletter. And if you decide you don't like the newsletter, you get your money back and get to keep the premiums. You can do a lot of variations of that. Another offer, and a good one, is to do a post-dated check. Another offer is, you know, you can send it COD. But you need to concentrate on your offer. The fifth thing I want to talk about is what selling formula. One selling formula is just a plain and simple description of your product with a request for money. And you can do that in a direct mail letter. Or you can, Karen, could I have Bond get me a hat? These lights are driving my eyes crazy. I beg your pardon? I've forgotten. Oh, what selling formula are you going to use? Perhaps the simplest selling formula is a simple, straightforward description of your product with a request for payment. A separate selling formula, one that I believe to be much more effective, is to run a lead generating ad, as I just described, that gets people to raise their hand, and then you send them a multi-page direct mail letter, or you send them a video or something else that sells them. Another selling formula would be to entice people to call an 800 number and then ask them, and that 800 number sells them on the idea of calling a 900 number. Did he go to get one, Karen? Okay. So you want to concentrate, you want to become aware of selling formulas. The safest selling formula that I know about is the two-step formula, using either classifieds or display ads and following up with a multi-page letter. Okay, and the last thing I want to talk about, well, the next to the last thing, the fifth thing, what's CSI? What's the central selling idea? The central selling idea is, you should be able to articulate it in a headline. You know, Marketing Genius offers free trips to Key West, Florida. New seminar guarantees to show you how to make money in real estate or you get double your money back. That is the central selling idea. You need to pay a lot of attention to this, and you probably ought to become a student of headlines, because the very best headlines are those that illustrate a central selling idea. They promise a benefit, they define what's special about this offer, and so forth. I have a product that offers a very good source of headlines, that killer advertising kit. We have several hundred of them in there. The sixth thing that I want to talk about is what format should you use. And we're going to talk about, since we're talking about direct mail here, in direct mail, that comprises almost everything from a catalog to a postcard or what have you. But the most powerful direct mail format that you can possibly use is a letter. And I want to tell you some things that I think can make letters much more effective. One of the things that can make a letter much more effective is if you include with the letter, this thing ought to have a little ledge on it, but it doesn't, something that credentials the letter, like a copy of a magazine ad, or a copy of a newspaper ad. When I announced that I was taking clients recently, all my subscribers got a letter describing my services, plus they got a copy of a newspaper article about me, The Amazing Marketing Miracles Created by Sir Gary of Halbert. Thank you very much. That's going to make this much more comfortable up here. Thank you. It's a lot better. So a good format to use is a simple multi-page letter backed up with an article credentialing your letter done on newsprint. I would recommend that to you. Another format idea that I would like to give you is, I know this seems contrary to what I talk about, but I like to put headlines on the top of letters even though I personalize the letter. Now, when I do that, I'll show you, give you an example of what it looks like. This is a personalized letter, but it has this headline. I don't think you can see that too well across the top, but I'll read to you a paragraph or two. The headline says, Philip Bentley pushes Gary C. Halbert into a massive mental depression and drives him to the brink of suicide. It says, to Philip Bentley, 375 Klein Avenue, Mansfield, Ohio, 44907. Dear Philip, please read the headline at the top of this page. Aren't you ashamed of yourself? Don't you feel badly about making me so depressed people around me have started a suicide watch? What kind of person are you anyway? Don't you have a conscience about stuff like this? Obviously not, because you didn't resubscribe to my newsletter. And I go on to offer him some bribes to resubscribe to my newsletter. And in the order coupon here, I have yes, double yes, and no. Dear Gary, yes, I am truly sorry to have caused you so much mental anguish, and therefore I am renewing my subscription to your newsletter, etc. Double yes. I'm not just sorry to have caused you so much mental anguish. I am ashamed. You know, therefore, he's subscribing for 2 years. And then no, go fly a kite. I don't like you. I don't like your newsletter. I don't care how depressed you are, and I don't even care if you do commit suicide. You know, that's going out to the people who didn't resubscribe to my newsletter. If at all possible, I think that your letters should be personalized. They should contain the date. They should be done on a word processor or look like they've done on a, been done on a word processor or a typewriter. I think it's a good idea to feature the person's name in the headline, as I did just then, kind of like puts his name in lights and grabs his attention. And as I said, I think it's a very good idea to credential your letter with an article or something. Another thing that can help you is by the use of grabbers. A grabber is something that you attach to the front page of a letter that grabs your prospect's attention and makes him grab for his wallet. My favorite grabber is money. I sent more dollar bill letters than probably anybody in history. But you can use as a grabber, you can use a photograph, you can use a coin. I once did a letter with a baggie with sand in it when I was writing a letter to sell beachfront property. Something that they can just take and hold in their hand while they're reading the letter is a pretty good idea. Let's see, what else do I have here? Another thing I wanted to say is that you should sell the destination, not the trip. When you're selling travel to Hawaii, you don't tell the people how much they're going to like being in the airplane, eating the airline's food, and sitting cramped with two other people who don't use right guard. You picture the beach in Waikiki and the girls walking around in bikinis and so forth. So another way of saying that is you need to remember that the hardware of what you're selling is not what you're selling. You're selling an end result there. There's another thing too. You know, with the LA riots and everything else that people have talked about here, it seems like the whole country, there's nothing but negative activity going on. That's not really true. There's a lot of good stuff going on. It's just that all they want to report is the negative stuff. I don't know if any of you from South Florida or Miami, we don't have the news anymore. It's just the body count. You know, they come in, you know, here's disaster number one, here's disaster number two, here's a businessman fraud number three, you know, and it's like if it's good, they don't want it on the news. So don't let yourself get too depressed by LA riots and depression and everything. That stuff has been around since the beginning of time. And, you know, and it's going to be on, it's going to go on no matter how long this ball of mud lasts. But there will always be special people like the people in this room that are going out, that are making it in spite of all odds. They're laughing and joking and having fun and conducting ethical business. I want to talk about the law a little bit too. If you go into business, you are going to run afoul of the law. It really doesn't matter how well you run your business. I am a professional at breaking the law. Last year, I found out that I broke the law by doing seminars under the name Key West College of Millionaires. It turns out in Florida, the Department of Education has a regulation against using the word college or institute in the name of any business. I recently discovered that I was breaking the law by selling videos to the general public which were not closed captioned for the hearing impaired. That's the law I happen to agree with. I think we should have to do them with a guy who talks real fast for the people who are hyperactive. And I think we should have them for doing real slow for stupid people. And I think we should have to do them in all 87 languages that are taught in Hollywood High School in Hollywood, California. But there is a law that I haven't broken yet, but I'm going to break it because I want to keep my record straight. In Florida, it is against the law to bake and sell a 12-ounce loaf of bread. I swear to God, I kid you not, but me and Paulette have reputations to maintain. And we are planning, this may be my last public appearance, to bake a 12-ouncer and sell it. And I'll tell you, you may laugh, but One day I'm going to shine. I'm going to be in a level 5 prison. I'll be out in the yard just talking to the guys. They talk, what are you in for? Oh, I killed 6 cops. What'd you do? I raped my grandmother, on and on. What'd you do, Halbert? I baked a 12-ounce loaf of bread, and I sold that sucker in South Florida. The point, there's a point I want to make about that. I don't know what it is, but no, the point is, seriously, that I think business owners are the most vilified group of people in America. We are all in a conspiracy to commit capitalism, and that is viewed by the press and the lazy and all the people on welfare and the media as a crime, conspiracy to commit capitalism. But in my opinion, the people in this room are the heroes of America. The people who go out there and hang it on the line and risk everything, mortgage their homes, get divorced because their wives say, why don't you go down and get the job at the Ohio Brass, Gary, just like your father did, Well, the fact of the matter is I hate to see people get discouraged and get depressed and get dumped on because they're in business. And one of the things you can do, which you're doing right now, you should make it a point to create an extended family for yourself, just like you have in this room. Because if you don't, you're going to get so much negative input from the rest of the world that you may succumb to it. Okay, there's a couple other points I want to make here. With all the talk about direct mail, I had almost decided not to give my standard A pile, B pile lecture here. But it's so important that I am going to give you an abbreviated summation of it. And if you don't learn anything else about direct mail, you better learn this. And it's very simple. Well, let me back up a little bit. Let me tell you how people believe direct mail works. They believe that you should get a Madison Avenue copywriter to write your letter for you. Then you should get a graphic artist with a degree in Twitter pants to do a great layout for you and put a puce sunset in the brochure. You take this to a printer and he prints everything up. Then you give it to your letter shop. That's the name of the organization that inserts your letters and seals and puts the stamp on and addresses them. The letter shop prints a bulk rate indicia on your envelope because it's cheaper than first class. It certainly is. And they take it to the loading zone of the post office. At the post office, the guy there gives the letter shop a receipt because he weighs it to how much it is. The letter shop guy gives you the receipt. And once it gets into the postal system, those postal workers just scurry. They just fall on this mail in a frenzy, and they sort it as fast as they can because they treat it with great respect. And then they send it through the postal system, and it gets to the post office of destination, and they sort it into carrier routes. And the mail carrier comes and grabs this, and he just runs out, and he delivers it, and there's a woman standing by her mailbox, and she says, oh, God, thank God, another piece of advertising mail. And she grabs it, rips it open, whips out her credit card, calls you, and gives you an order. The reality is slightly different than that. The reality is, in my judgment, the letter shops only deliver 90% of the mail that they charge you to the loading dock of the post office. Now, you may wonder, why do they do that? It's just good math. the thing is, you're never going to know how much they delivered, but wait a minute, that guy at the post office weighed it, didn't he? I mean, how could you get a guy who works for the U.S. government to sign a receipt that he received 100,000 pieces of mail when he only received 90? Well, people who work for the post office have the IQ of garden vegetables. they're almost possible to fire them. Had Jeffrey Dahmer worked for the post office, he'd still be working. He wouldn't be in jail. By the way, when John told you he charged an arm and a leg for writing copy, he was talking about the work he did for Dahmer. So I think about only 90% of your mail gets delivered to the post office. Then another curious thing is that bulk rate mail does not get forwarded. You know, if somebody left a forwarding address, and you can anticipate at least 7% of the people will have moved and left a forwarding address. So now you're down 17% because you used bulk rate mail. But also, on a national average, properly addressed bulk rate mail, 17% of it doesn't get addressed. So now you're down 34%. By the way, what happens to bulk rate mail is that they throw it away. Even the most dangerous thing that could ever happen to you is someone talks you in to doing a test, bulk rate versus first class, and bulk rate turns out to be a little more profitable. That will hardly ever happen, but occasionally it will. You know why that's dangerous? The reason is because that time they didn't throw as much of it away as they normally did. And what you've got to watch out for is the day they throw it all away. Write this down. Bulk rate is the dumpster rate. Bulk rate is the dumpster rate. If you continue to mail bulk rate, one of these days, all of your mail will be thrown away. Mark Stoddard of the Jefferson Institute had a tested direct mail letter, and it had been thoroughly tested, and then they dropped 600,000 pieces of mail and didn't get a single reply. Not a single reply. But he found his mail. It was in the dumpsters behind the main Chicago post office. Happens every day. So here I want to summarize some things that can give you some huge edges when you're working in direct mail. Look for a product that's underexploited. The last thing you need is creativity, cuteness, uniqueness, or anything. Hey, put the odds on your side. Bet on sure things. Get yourself a product that's already selling. Magnify its saleability with enhancers such as celebrities, money-back guarantees, post-dated checks, larger ads, more media, etc. You know the guy that's running in the National Enquirer? He could make a fortune. He could make a fortune simply by running that same ad in Parade magazine. Some people, they can only think this big. So if you can come along and if your vision's bigger, you know, you could take that ad. I mean, you wouldn't want to do that, but if you bought that ad from him, you could reproduce it word for word on a full page in Parade magazine. In 1970, I've got it written down somewhere, I think $260,000 from one ad for a Social Security book. And we were selling it at $3 a book back then. So look for products that are underexploited. You should become aware of mailing lists. You should work with a good list broker. You should become aware of the SRDS book. But a very good way to put the odds in your favor is to create your own mailing list by running small display ads that will produce leads for you, or, as John Eager has said, running small classified ads that will produce leads for you, or even running television spots that will produce leads for you. The main thing is, if you can get a person to raise his hand, it is better to spend $10 trying to sell one person who has raised his hand than it is $10 trying to sell 100 people who haven't shown you any life. You know, I have a saying that you should concentrate on selling the foxes and don't worry about offending the dogs. A variation of that is that you should put your money where your prospects really are. And once a man or woman, has said, hey, I'm interested in that, then go after them. That's where to spend your money. The other things are, what offers should you make? Nothing can make a difference as sweetening your offer. You know, I'll tell you one thing that would make, I'm going to tell you something that would make most of the people in this room with a product puke, to put it delicately. Run an ad for your product and give it away, offer it free. You will be surprised how few orders some of these screwball product ideas will get, even if you offer them free. So there's a point I want to make with that. It doesn't matter what the offer is if you're trying to sell something that somebody doesn't want. And I'll tell you, the worst kind of conversations I have with people, and I try and be civil because I'm just naturally a really nice person, they just think I love this conversation. Hey, Gary, I got a great idea. I know you're going to love this. When I explain this idea for you, you're not going to want me to become a client. You're going to want to be my partner, and you're going to want to finance this ad, and you're going to want to run to... And I'm going to let you finance the ad, and I'm going to let you write the ad, and I'm going to let you fill the orders, and I'm going to split the money with you. The very last product that someone talked to me about that was the day before yesterday. It's a guy most of the people in the room know is, I'm not going to embarrass him. But the guy calls me and says, I know you're busy, Gary. You know, you're at home, and I know you value your privacy, but I've tracked you down. I got to talk to you. I got this hot product idea. I says, well, what is it? He says, you remember the Ouija boards? I said, yeah. He says, I'm going to come up with a Ouija board with numbers 1 through 44. And we're going to sell it to all the people who have no money, who play the lotto. Get that? Sell it to all the people who have no money so they can figure out how to win the lotto with it. So